Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Hey, podcast lovers. My name is Haley, and I run the Don't Identify podcast. I have been passionate about helping the unidentified get their names back ever since I found out I lived within miles of where Sherry Ann Jarvis, formerly known as the Walker County Jane Doe, was found. In my podcast, I tell the stories and provide information about unidentified people in hopes of reaching their loved ones and getting their names back. So come join me and help me advocate.
Hey, Twisted Listeners, I'm Cindy.
And I'm Diva.
And this is Twisted Listeners, a podcast about murder.
And lists.
Brought to you by the Pod Moth Podcasting Network. Check out all the other shows. We also got invited to this like podcast roundtable thing where we're gonna like swap ads for each other. So we're gonna have one extra ad somewhere in the episode, and then we're gonna swap with other people to get more exposure. So just look out for that. Last episode, I didn't have a microphone. But neither did Diva, so we were both just
Had it turned off. Yeah, we sounded weird, but
we both sounded weird. I called it free balling. I don't think you liked that much.
I don't free basing. I don't know. It's
free basing is crack cocaine, Diva.
No, I know, but like when you say free balling, it makes me think of free basing.
I'm talking about men not wearing underwear and just letting it swing in the wind. Like that's what we were doing.
I went to crack.
You went to crack.
That's what I was thinking. All right.
Well. Now I know why you didn't like it. I thought it's because you don't like talking about balls, but
I was picturing like crack. Yeah.
Yeah. You okay.
Free balling. Okay.
Anyway, both of our microphones are working today. So.
Yes. Behold the glorious audio.
Oh, that's fucking hilarious. Oh man. Okay. Yeah. Despite our hilarious intro, this is a really serious and shitty topic. Part two of journalists who were murdered for telling the truth. I added that in there to be like extra political about it into the title. But this is the story of journalists who were murdered basically for doing their jobs, doing them a little too well and standing up to the powers that do not wish to be stood up to. So pretty fucked up.
Freedom of the press is not really a thing in a lot of places.
No, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist here, that's for sure. I mean, I can't think of anywhere that it really does.
You covered one from Oakland last time. So
exactly. Yeah. So anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in. If you'd like to join us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/twistedlisters. TikTok is just @twistedlisters. Also, I don't post very much on TikTok, but I've got so into ASMR videos lately. Oh my God. I can't stop watching them. But they give Rory panic attacks, so I have to go in the other room. It's really, really fucking
That's
bizarre.
So funny. It's such a calming thing to get a panic attack from.
I know. The sounds. That's he's so like, I can't handle it. Turn it off. Like, he'll hear it for like a split second and like jump up off the couch and be like, I gotta go.
You know what? I love just a hot recommendation in case you're a historical nerd about history like me and you like ASMR. Sometimes I fall asleep to this YouTube channel where this lady makes like early 19th century American frontier recipes, but ASMR. Ooh. So all the little like... It's like she's by a little fire, like poking a thing, and like
it crackles.
The food all looks like shit. So it's both historically educational about shitty American pioneer food, and also like the crackling and the cutting.
Auditorially pleasing, is that a word?
It's really comforting.
That sounds amazing. That's not what our TikTok is. Our TikTok's about murder. You can come for our TikTok.
And Cindy yelling at people in the comments.
Oh God, I'm so spicy in there. Fuck those people. They're all such trolls. Yeah. All right. Anyway, if you want to join us on TikTok and check out that hot mess, you can do that. If you'd like to join us on Instagram, you can do that at
Twisted Listers PCast.
If you would like to send us, oh my God, my dog is scratching at the door. If you'd like to send us an email with case suggestions or to say hello or to comment on anything and everything, you can do that at
TwistedListersPod@gmail.com.
And our website is
TwistedListersPod.com.
Okay, so now that we have that all out of the way, let's get to the recording. You go first, right, this time?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, because I went first last time. Okay, cool.
All right. So this is going to be angering and confusing and ambiguous. You're going to be mad. So
fun.
That's my preface.
Okay.
That's my preface. This is the tale of Hala and Aruba Berikat. We are in 2017 in Istanbul, Turkey.
Okay.
Aruba Berikat at this time was 62. She is an all-around badass, extremely spicy, to use the word again, journalist. And her daughter, Hala, who's 23, basically followed in her footsteps in the exact same field with the same approach, coming in hot and spicy, unafraid to say fucking anything they want. Mm-hmm. And they both are Syrian.
Okay.
And they had to leave Syria, however, when the war starts in 2011.
Okay.
And they eventually, they kind of bopped around from different places as refugees before they eventually kind of settled in Istanbul.
Mm-hmm.
Hala, the daughter here, was actually a U.S. citizen because for a while earlier in her life, Aruba stayed with her relatives in North Carolina.
Okay.
And had Hala while she was living there. So Hala is a U.S.
citizen. Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. She was living with her cousin, Dr. Suzanne Berikat, who I bring up because she'll come back later.
Okay.
Hala actually also, because of her, I think her dual kind of role, living, being a U.S. citizen, but living abroad, she also worked with ABC News. So she did like major stories for them. Yeah.
Okay. So they're like big time legit.
Big time legit. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And Aruba had been a like regular journalist, I guess. But after becoming refugees and after the war broke out, she and her daughter both really focused their journalistic work on activism, but particularly being very, very vocal, outspoken critics of the Assad regime.
Okay.
And ISIS, duh. Obviously, yeah. Everyone hates ISIS.
Yeah.
And here's a 2-second review. It's probably like more than 2 seconds. I wrote 2-second review on my notes, but then I ended up going down a Wikipedia wormhole. It was like 11:30 p.m. and I'm reading about Assad on like Wikipedia, and I'm like, all right, good night, me. Sweet dreams.
Good night, me.
Yeah. I don't know. Cindy, you want to do a historical summary of Bashar al-Assad?
No, I'm going to let you do that because you have notes in front of you.
I don't know. You know politics so good.
I do. No. I feel like I can chime in if you miss something.
Okay. Maybe. Well, yeah. Tell me if you have a different take here, but, my read on him is generally that he's a dick.
Yes.
He, the real jerk here. He's been president of Syria since 2000. And he got the job from his dad dying. So he's essentially a dictator pretending to be a president. He's had a bunch of fake, elections, quote unquote. But he's a dictator, and he kind of worked with and supported ISIS for several years, especially after opposition groups and rebel groups protested his regime starting in 2011. So he kind of supports them to like crush the resistance movements, even as ISIS became kind of a quasi official state encroaching upon the actual land of Syria itself. He still was kind of tacitly supporting them.
Yes.
So, yeah, they're kind of, and they torture people and imprison people. They have all kinds of like human rights abuses, like a whole bouquet of them.
It's insane. It's fucking insane. Shitty. It's terrible. Yeah. It's really fucked.
And the reason that there's been, you know, obviously a fuck ton of Syrian refugees all various places around the world. So
I think I think when his dad died, like he was too young to be president.
Yeah.
And so they lowered the age so he could be president.
Yeah, it sounds right. Yeah, it's one of those things too where I got the impression from reading online that it was one of those things where his dad was a shitty dictator, but somehow he was even worse.
Yeah,
like, when he got in power, he actually did a worse job. He was like, what if I made this more authoritarian?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, most kids
kind of thing.
It's like, you expect the kids to be like a little bit less gnarly versions of their parents, but in this case, that's not at all what happened.
It's worse. Yeah.
For whatever
reason. So Assad
sucks.
Yeah. And Aruba and Hala are not afraid to tell you that Assad
how much
fucking
he sucks. Yeah. Good for them.
Yeah. And you can see videos of them leading protests out in the streets, giving interviews, talking to, you know, doing reports, basically saying this is a criminal regime. They're fucking torturing people. Like they were just laying it all out. Like
they were just telling the truth is actually what they're doing.
Yeah. But they were not afraid.
Straight up. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. In 2017, Aruba's family also will say later that she was actually in the middle of undertaking a super top secret, like sneaky investigation into Syria's notorious Sednaya prison. which is just outside of Damascus. It's a military prison, so you can only fucking imagine.
Yeah.
A military prison run by the Assad regime. What fun stuff is happening in there, right?
I mean, it's probably like Guantanamo. Like, it's probably not that far off.
Yeah, actually, I don't want to rank military prisons, but yeah, it might even be crazier, because apparently the U.S. and some other world powers had alleged that Assad was carrying out mass murders, just like wholesale killing everyone, and then building crematoriums to burn the bodies.
I mean, I don't trust anything the U.S. says, because their ties with Syria are very, like, questionable. But
you know, it's certainly not impossible.
Exactly. Like, I don't believe it because they said it. I don't not believe it because it's definitely possible, I guess is what I'm saying. It's just like,
it's definitely possible. I'm just saying, I'm not saying we know 100%, but we do know some shady shit is happening there for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
To what extent that's it, I don't know, but it's definitely not, it's not good.
Right.
But again, of course, the U.S. has horrific, horrific atrocities in the past and now, and in prisons. But so again, it's not the U.S. that makes that true. It just, I think it could be true because of Assad.
No. I mean, I completely agree. Yeah. He's a brutal, terrifying dictator. I just think that our country is no better. We just are still hiding it a little bit for a little while longer for some reason. So we can, like,
the fact that pretend to be on our high government horse. Yeah, exactly. The fact that the U.S. said it is not what makes it, like, viable. But makes it anyway.
So. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So Aruba, I think this is like September. I didn't get the date. But after this particular date, Aruba doesn't show up to her job, journalisting. And so a friend comes and checks on them, and no one's opening up. And so they eventually get a locksmith and authorities, and everyone goes in the house, and they are found brutally murdered in their apartment.
Both of them.
Aruba and Hala. Yeah, their throats had been slit.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'll get into the wounds later because it's important.
Okay.
Their bodies were covered with blankets or sheets.
Mm-hmm.
Their apartment was splattered with blood, and it had also had laundry detergent that was described as sort of carefully, the powdered kind, that was described as having been carefully applied to, like, all the blood as well.
I wonder what that does.
Apparently it was to just hide the smell, perhaps, or to, like, they were trying to, like, get rid of chemical evidence, but the blood was still, like, there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like there's dead bodies on the ground. You're not going to be like, I wonder whose blood this is. Like, it's not.
Right.
It seems really weird.
Just, yeah, I'm not sure what the point was.
It's a very strange step, but okay, yeah.
No one in the neighborhood, which was very quiet and peaceful, residential neighborhood, no one reported a single fucking peep out of the apartment. And this is an apartment building, too, so you know the walls probably aren't great.
Yeah.
No one reported a single sound or scream or anything. So about a week later, Turkish police find an official and arrest an official suspect, Ahmed Barakat, who is described as a distant relative, quote unquote, of Aruba's. He had been working for her off and on for the past 6 months that he had been in Istanbul. He's kind of struggling to get back, struggling to get on his feet. He didn't know anyone else in town. Officials said that Ahmed told the prosecutors and the judge a confession. Basically, he confessed. And here's what he said, according to officials.
Okay.
He said that Aruba owed him a debt. And I saw in several articles this described as a small debt.
Okay.
So whatever that means, I didn't get the amount. But Aruba owed him a small debt. So he confronted her about it in her apartment, and she refused to pay and got a knife and started attacking him with it.
Oh, I'm sure that's exactly what happened.
This 62-year-old woman,
yeah. And in this fight,
Aruba's wild and with a knife, and so he attacks her, takes the knife away, and stabs her frenetically, just like, I'm just stabbing you, right? Like, I'm so mad.
Mm-hmm.
And he said Hala was there and was screaming, and so he had to kill her to shut her up.
Because the screaming.
Yeah, all that screaming.
So he murdered her because she was screaming, and that's his best defense of why it's her fault? Jesus. Yeah. That's fucking stupid. Because
she was a witness, yeah.
Okay.
So the trial is insanely fast. Ahmed gets 2 life sentences. Mm-hmm. Boom, case closed. We're all done. The family says they were told virtually nothing through all the arrest and trial, which happened in like 5 minutes. And they were, before they could even like blink, it was already over. They were like, what? Okay, so thoughts? How's that sound to you?
Wait, you're done? You're not actually
done. No, I'm not done. No.
Oh, I was like, Diva.
I was just pausing for Cindy's reflections.
I mean, this is fucking bullshit. Obviously, this is some kind of cover up. He's the patsy. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I don't know what they did to make him. I don't know how involved he is, but like, obviously, that's not what happened, like at all.
No.
That's so ridiculous.
Right away, people think this is all too convenient, and the Barakats must have been murdered to silence their vocal opposition to Assad, which is like a very obvious thing motive, that someone can get murdered for. Yeah. The Assad regime is widely known to monitor journalists, put them on watch lists, assassinate them, attempt to assassinate them, like right and left, like boop, 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 like every day.
Mm-hmm.
They generally see journalists as a major threat. They want them to shut the fuck up. They imprison them, all kinds of stuff, right?
Which is fucking, yeah.
Yeah. In 2019, interestingly, the U.S. even imposed a, quote, $30 million judgment for the death of a U.S. journalist, Marie Colvin, who was covering the Syrian war, which Assad murdered. And that guilty judgment actually came in part from Aruba herself. She provided all the evidence. So she was actually she was actually helping to prove that Syria murdered a U.S. journalist.
Wow. When she herself was murdered.
Before, obviously. Well, but
No. But like at the time, I mean. Was it at the time? Yeah. It was at the time she was murdered. She had been doing that.
Well, no. The 2019 is the judgment. But all the evidence prior, she had assembled for them. That's she was helping to prove insane. That. Yes. Also, several U.S. like representatives and senators and whatever the fuck also mm-hmm. call for an investigation into the murders, because don't forget, Hall is a U.S. citizen.
Right.
She's a fucking U.S. journalist, quote unquote, technically.
Right.
She worked for ABC News actively at this time.
Right.
But no FBI investigation is ever opened. Why
is that?
Despite the fact that they almost always do when a U.S. citizen is murdered abroad, like no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
They did not. And they said later that they supposedly offered help to Turkish police to do a further investigation, but that was refused. Of course it was.
So you just don't fucking ask. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, they don't have to ask. The FBI doesn't have to ask to do anything. So.
Yeah, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah. And of course they're going to be like, no, stay out of it, Americans, you know?
Yeah. Right.
So Ahmed also recanted his confession right away.
Mm-hmm.
That basically the next time he appeared in court, and he accused his translator of basically strongly coercing him to cooperate in order to get a lenient sentence, doing that mm-hmm. thing where it's like, you're going to get, you know, this and this and this, and like kind of tricking him. Mm-hmm. He has been appealing his conviction. I don't know what all came of that, but he did many appeals. He says he was coerced. Aruba's Twitter account was also hacked after her murder, and her profile picture was changed to a picture of Assad. And the following message was the following message was posted from it. All of her old tweets were deleted, and this was posted. Quote, the golden condor hacked with greetings. The golden condor, Assad's soldiers are everywhere.
That's fucking disgusting. It's so blatant, too.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Also, I just want to point out that can we trust the Turkish National Police? I don't know to what extent we can. Turkey is actually extremely dangerous for journalists as well. So even though
they were there.
Right. So even though they were criticizing Syria primarily, Turkey kind of supports a crackdown on journalists like 100%.
Yeah. That's so crazy.
But they've been known to punish and criminalize journalism against.
Do we know why they were? Why are they living in Turkey?
I mean, I think plenty of Syrians are, just to, you know.
It's crazy. Well, yeah. So for reference, I actually just looked it up because I was like, that's so close to Syria. It's like still very dangerous. Basically, from driving from like Los Angeles to Reading it's like less than 500 miles. It's less than 500 miles. It's less than like the length of the state of California between like Turkey and Syria. Which is fucking insane. I mean,
maybe they like the cultural like adjacency, though. You know, it's not as like a much of a culture shock. But it just
feels scary. Like if you're this outspoken to be somewhere where you're so in such close proximity to like such fucking crazy like
devotees.
Like to these people.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And people also question if he would do that over a small debt. Like, is that really a strong enough motive?
No, of course not.
Some people also said that the crime seemed professional And what was with all that detergent and like the effort to cover it up? There was also the question of the silence, which I find quite damning, right? Because he's saying that it's this frenetic thing and they're screaming, but no one heard fucking anything.
Nobody heard a goddamn thing because that's not what happened. That's not what happened.
Yeah. So I will, in all fairness, I will list the evidence against him that the Turkish police cites. Yeah, and this comes from ABC News investigation later of like, basically, ABC News later on, they get all of the Turkish police records that I guess that they're willing to share, right? And this is some of the evidence that does look bad for Ahmed.
Okay.
So he was, or, well, you can frame it a couple different ways, but he was seen on security cameras in the area that night.
Okay.
So he was there, potentially. He's shown the next morning in the area as well in different clothes and with a shopping bag.
Okay.
It's not damning, but it's not like great.
Right.
He does put himself at the scene that night, though. He says that he went by the apartment and knocked, but no one answered. And he ended up kind of sleeping by the water, kind of, you know, like a person homeless, like I think essentially he was that night.
Right.
Because they weren't there and he just wanted a place to stay and he left when they weren't there. That's what he says.
Okay. Which sounds more possible. Like, I mean,
it's possible. Yeah.
Who's to say that, like, they didn't see him on those security cameras and, like, decide to frame him? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right. So I did say that, you know, this is either a sign that he's guilty or it is the perfect opportunity for them to be like, oh, we found the patsy. Right.
Right.
He put himself there. He's in the area. This is perfect. Right. So you could go either way with it. Slightly more damning, though, is that, and again, this is according to the prosecutor, Ahmed's DNA was found under Aruba's fingernails, which does look bad. But again, it all kind of hinges on how much you want to trust the prosecutor.
Right. Right.
That's who's telling us that.
Yeah.
We've seen even in like, you know, cases like what's his face, Kendrick Johnson or like Kanika Jenkins. Like we've seen cases where people are doubting medical reports and prosecutors in America. So, like,
I mean, we've seen tons of cases where prosecutors are lying. I mean, it happens every single day.
There's definitely evidence against him, but how much you want to trust it or not is, you know, is up in the air. How much stake you want to put in it. So
the DNA is the only thing that's not that's the only thing that's like even a little bit convincing to me at all.
So the Barakat family, led by Dr. Suzanne Barakat, who I mentioned before, who's Aruba's cousin, and she actually now lives in the SF Bay area. She's a really successful doctor. And by the way, I'll just say a caveat, like a really eloquent speaker.
Okay.
Like she's done, well, I'll talk about her more in a second.
Okay.
But she's fantastic. So she's been kind of the voice of this calling for justice. So she and ABC News, which is where Hala like worked, and a bunch of other independent journalistic organizations have been continuing to say, hey, this isn't right, and trying to continue to investigate or call for a more thorough investigation beyond Ahmed. And the family actually has an interesting theory, which I think is potentially legit, which is that Ahmed was involved, but as an accomplice.
That's kind of what my thought was like, maybe he's involved, but like not for the reason he's saying, like if he is down on his luck, if he is whatever, you know, maybe he was targeted to be like exactly an accomplice.
Yeah, so maybe they planned to make him the patsy ahead of time.
Yes,
then asked him, hey, can you just get us in the door, we just want to talk to her or something, you know what I mean? Like
that is 100% where my mind went the moment you told me that he was the one who was arrested.
Exactly. So that's fully possible. I was thinking that he could get them in the door. Right. Yeah. So that way there wasn't any forced entry.
Right.
She would have let him in.
Right.
So that's what I was thinking.
And it also other people puts say him there.
Yes. It's perfect. And then also he's going to be afraid to like flip on them because he'll die.
Because look at what's going on. Yeah, exactly.
Because it's not, you don't flip on like government agents, you know?
No.
So they also, people across the board, like his family and people that know him, say there's no way he could do this by himself, like overpower the both of them. So it does make sense that there could be a group, right?
Right.
And so ABC News, like I said, also takes up the investigation. They put out an episode of Frontline in 2020 about this case. And it's really cool because these are like people that knew Hala personally, and they're like essentially her coworkers, and they're all like testifying how awesome she was as well and how personal it is that they do this investigation for her. But they basically, like I said, they got all of the Turkish National Police documents that they could get.
Mm-hmm.
And even within these materials, they found tons of issues, tons of inconsistencies. Like, for example, they never find the murder weapon or the plastic bag he was carrying that night. So it's never, it's framed like this incriminating thing, but like, where is it?
What was it? Yeah, why didn't you even have it if it's so incriminating? Like, if that's the case, like,
what is it? And also, this I find especially suspicious on the side of susness here. The prosecutor the investigator who first arrived at the crime scene,
mm-hmm.
and the family member, the Barakat family member who washed the bodies before burial, which is a Muslim tradition you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
The family members have to be the ones to wash you.
Okay.
So that family member and the first responder both swore up and down that each of them had a single neck wound, as if both of them had their throat slit.
Okay. And that was the only thing. It wasn't
period. That's
crazy, frenzied attack. That's kind of what I thought. That's what I was expecting to hear.
Yeah. So they both said that is 100,000%. Like, I'm positive. There was not a single other blood drop, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Weirdly, the autopsy report they get from Turkey says that there were tons of stab wounds to the face, to the neck, just like, right? Just everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Which would neatly fit with that confession, right? That Ahmed gave, that it was a crime of passion. He was just stabbing them like crazy. Because that's what he said, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So that would, like, you know, kind of check out that if an autopsy report is being falsified to match the story, the fingernail thing could also be bullshit, right?
Exactly. It's all pointing to this very neatly tied in a bow, like, now exactly. The thorn in the side of the Syrian government has been removed, and we can just pin it on this rando fucking family member dude that nobody cares about.
Exactly. And mm-hmm. just be done with it. And the throat slit thing too, to me, speaks of what people are talking about when they say like a professional hit, because to me that's like, and also the no screaming, because to me that tells me that they silenced them quickly.
Yep.
They like hand over the mouth or something. They got them quiet very quickly and slit their throats very quickly.
Yeah. And even if there was blood, like, that could have been thrown, like, it could have been like thrown on the walls. It could have been, you know, from their artery getting cut. You know what I mean? Like, your jugular is going to spurt. Like, there's,
right. But to me, it's like they were like kind of sneak attacked and boom, throat slit. You're quiet, right? You can't scream. So I think that's like very consistent with that, and with multiple people getting them quiet quickly, right? And it's not consistent with the fake autopsy report and his fake story about the crime of passion. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. So also the official documents mentioned that Aruba had received many death threats and suspicious threats in the weeks before the murders.
Yeah. That probably weren't from him, I'm going to guess. He wasn't like threatening her to kill her and then came over.
Yeah. Like, and he's the perfect patsy suspect or whatever, too, because he's also like new in town, doesn't have a lot of connections. He's like a black sheep, kind of outskirts person in the family.
Yeah.
He's poor. Yep. He's, you know, down on his luck. He's the perfect guy. You know, I really think they found him ahead of time and just wrote this out.
I mean, there's no reason that they couldn't or wouldn't. You know, this is an extremely powerful government. It's not.
Yeah.
You know, it makes sense for them to do something like this. It's very simple. It's very easy. It can't really be traced back to them. It's just, did he ever say, like, he just said, no, it wasn't me. I wasn't there. I went and knocked and then they weren't there and I left.
Yeah. That was his final.
I mean, that could also be.
It could also be true. Yeah. I mean, it's a coincidence if he went there that night and they were also murdered that night. But like, it is technically possible. If the fingernail thing is bullshit, you know. Then,
which I feel like if the autopsy is bullshit, the fingernail thing is certainly bullshit.
Yeah.
He
wasn't even an accomplice. Yeah.
Right. Or like the autopsy technician could have fucking put the shit under the fingernails. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many points at which this could have been staged.
That's true. Ugh. Yeah. So it's very frustrating. And very frustratingly, that's it. Since all the coverage in 2020 and the ABC investigation in 2020, there's lots of good info out there about why this is bullshit, but Turkey's made its decision. The US and the FBI have said, we officially stand by Turkey's decision. We're not going to do anything about it. So
that's really interesting, because the reason that we're not doing anything about it is political. And that's fucking ridiculous, because politics, like money, aren't fucking real. No, I know.
I think it's because it's Turkey. Yeah, it's obviously we oppose Assad, right? Like, in general, but as a government, but like it's because they're in Turkey.
Right. Well, Syria's not Turkey, so it's like, yeah, it's a different thing.
We can't come out against anything Turkey's doing.
Yeah, which is ridiculous because, like I said, politics, money, those things are fake. Like, people are actually alive. Like, that's real. And giving a shit about their death is real. And the whole thing makes me insane.
Yeah. Also, sorry, I have to add one more really sad thing here that I forgot to mention. Yeah, so in 2015, this was 2 years before, actually. So 2 years before Aruba and Hala's murders, insanely, Dia Shadi Barakat, who's Suzanne, the cousin's brother, and two other people were killed in the 2015 Chapel Hill shooting.
Oh, fuck.
Which is essentially like a hate crime, if I understand it correctly, I believe, in North Carolina, where they were killed because they were Muslims.
Yes. So, I knew exactly what you're talking about as soon as you said that. Yeah, yeah. That's fucking crazy. So this family just has a lot of tragedy around
Tons of tragedy. And like I said, Dr. Suzanne Barakat has done like TED Talks and like kinds of like several speeches and talks you can watch her give online about dealing with like how she's kind of used her experiences with that tragedy in particular, of her brother's murder, to speak out against Islamophobia and hate and all this stuff. And like, she's fucking eloquent as fuck and like really, really cool.
Check that out.
But yeah, it's fucked up that family's had to like endure so much bullshit.
So much of this. And a lot of it's just because they had the, you know, guts to speak out, which is fucking crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. Or in the case of the Chapel Hill thing, just the daring to exist in public.
Yeah, just being Muslim because we're terrified of that in our fucking ridiculous Christian nation. Jesus.
Yeah. Oof.
Well, all right. That was really depressing. Let's continue that train. Are you ready to yell with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Good. I figure always, whenever I ask that or whenever you ask me, I'm always like, of course. So.
Yeah, I'm ready.
Everybody get ready. This is the story of Daphne Caruana Galizia. She was a journalist who was murdered in October 2017 in Malta. So 1 month after yours. Same year. So it was not a good year for journalists.
No.
Yours was 2017, right? Yeah, September 2017.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So she was an extremely popular journalist. She wrote for various papers and publications, but also had a very popular blog that she started in 2008. This blog was called Daphne's Notebook, and it was written in English, which helped its popularity. So Daphne was born and raised in Malta. For those of you who don't know, Malta is at the tip. It's an island off the coast of Italy. So basically, Italy is a boot. Malta is the ball that the boot is kicking, is what it looks like. Maltese people do not consider themselves Italian. Or actually, I think there's another little space and then Malta. But essentially, it's right there.
Oh, it's its own country.
It's its own country. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah. But it's bundled in with Italy a lot, but it's separate. It's a completely separate thing. They have their own parliament, they have their own everything, right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
That being said, it's a small ass country. So she was born in 1964. She attended various religious schools, because I think that's like the type of education that they had available. She later attended the University of Malta, where she got a degree in anthropology. When she was 18, she attended a protest of the incoming government, the Labour Party, and was arrested for her protesting. This left a really bad taste in her mouth, not only for politics in general, but for the Labour Party in Malta in particular. She felt like, why are they treating us like they're dictators? Like, we're allowed to protest their politics if we want to. Like, why are we being punished for doing that? And this is something that she kind of focused on for the rest of her life. She didn't really stew on it so much as she used her voice and her writing abilities to consistently expose the wrongdoings of politicians and people in power in Malta and abroad, but mostly in Malta, right? She was very, very focused on Maltese politics, but she definitely had a range, you know? So she was a super straightforward and opinionated woman, not unlikable, but definitely not worried about being liked. She cared about the truth. That was her thing.
Also spicy.
Mm-hmm. Very spicy, very intense. I suggest everybody go check out her blog. It's still up. The last stories written were written the day of her death, which is pretty crazy. Oof. And I'll talk about that. But it's almost like tabloid style in her like spiciness, but it's fucking great. And I learned a lot about her and about Maltese politics from 2017, at least. So, you know, she ruffled a lot of feathers. Over the years, she was arrested by the Maltese police twice and threatened almost daily via phone calls, letters, emails, and in person. She had her house set on fire while her family was asleep inside of it. One of her sons came home and noticed it was on fire and saved everyone. She's had people assault her. This is very sad, Diva. You might want to earmuff this one. She had three different family dogs murdered in various ways. And, like, left on her doorsteps and shit. I know, you shut up. I know, it's really terrible. Shut up, Cindy. I'm sorry, but I
mean,
had
okay,
to.
I thought, I mean, honestly, I'm a bad person, but I was about to say at least it wasn't a cat.
Yeah, thanks. Great. And I won't go into the details that I unfortunately read about how these Please animals don't. Were Please killed. Don't. Suffice it to say, it's pretty fucking gnarly. Okay. As I mentioned, she had three sons. She was married. She had three sons in 3 years. So all three of her sons, she had them when they were like, when she was like 22, 23, and 24. So she had them young. Right. She had them really close together. Yeah. So her entire family was exposed to this treatment. They basically grew up around this, right? Yeah. And to be clear, just in case it's like, well, why would you do that if you have a family? Da, 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 da. Her entire family supported her. And one of her sons even followed in her footsteps, becoming a reporter that focused on corruption. Okay? So no need for
anybody. Down.
Yeah, they're all into it. She started her journalism career in 1987, writing for the Sunday Times of Malta. This was huge, as it was not common for women to have these types of jobs in Malta or have political opinions whatsoever. So she was also like a big time trailblazer. She also later wrote for the Malta Independent and also had her own monthly magazine insert called Taste and Flair, which was a lifestyle magazine. Yes, very.
Love it.
Yeah, I love it. So like I said, she was a big voice. She pissed a lot of people off. At one point, she called out the Minister of Labor for allegedly having attended a brothel while in Germany on business.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So these types of stories landed her in court quite often. And I think it, at least one time she did lose like a libel suit because she wouldn't expose her sources. But they would like crowdfund money. People would like, you know, help pay for, you know, for whatever happened. And oftentimes she could back it up, which pissed people off even more because she's like, I'm not writing things that I'm, you know, that I don't have proof of. So for the most part, she just continued to piss people off because essentially they couldn't touch her. One time that she was arrested was for posting a video mocking the Labour Party member and then Prime Minister Joseph Muscat. So she had no fear because, you know, she's just like, fuck the Prime Minister. And they're like, we're going to arrest you now for this, which also like, can you imagine getting arrested for posting like a disparaging video of like Joe Biden? Like that's
I was just about to say, I think we're talking about our future.
Yeah, like, I think we are too. Yeah,
this the collapse in a few United years. States.
Yeah, it really is. So here's a look into our future, guys. But basically she had no fear. Like she knew she could get arrested for this and she did it anyway.
That's
so
cool.
Now in mid-2016, I have to shift gears here a little bit to talk about, and I'm only gonna talk about this really quickly. This really big thing happened in the world of journalism and politics, and this was the releasing of the Panama Papers. And we'll talk about that in a second. So on February 22nd, 2016, Daphne alleged that Maltese government minister, government minister, which I don't know what that is, Conrad Mizzi, had connections with Panama and New Zealand, which is where a lot of offshore accounts are held. Mizzi admitted to having these accounts there, saying it was to protect money for his family. So she busted him and he had to fucking admit it. 3 days later, on February 25th, she revealed that Maltese Prime Minister Joseph Muscat's chief of staff, Keith Shembri, owned a similar trust in New Zealand, which in turn held a Panama company. So again, some weird offshore shit, right?
Offshore is never good.
No, never good, although it's legal. So in April of that same year, 2016, the Panama Papers were released to the public. This could be and is in itself enough information for a full-on podcast. And there are podcasts that cover the Panama Papers, but I'll paraphrase as best I can in like two sentences.
Okay.
So the Panama Papers were about 2.6 terabytes of information, or roughly 11 million pages of documents, connecting various uber-rich assholes to offshore accounts mostly located in Panama, and associated with an extremely unscrupulous law firm, Monsac Fonseca. This firm was linked to a number of illegal dealings. Like I said, offshore tax shelter accounts are somehow legal in many cases, but a lot of these businesses were shown to not only have these tax shelters, but also to be engaged in deeply illegal actions. And there were a fuck ton of names linked to these accounts, including Tiger Woods, then British Prime Minister David Cameron, and a bunch of other people. Mm-hmm. Like you would be surprised how many like politicians and celebrities out of the US were involved in this. It's fucking crazy.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So suffice it to say, these papers contained a ton of names and a ton of very incriminating information. None of which really did much because, as we all know, we're controlled by an elite class and they're not going to allow themselves to be prosecuted. So these papers, all they did was like point it out to everybody. And then we all went, well, that's nice. Nothing we can do about it.
Yeah. So,
these papers were leaked by a John Doe who refused to be named or meet in person, but the legitimacy of the documents was not ever in question. Daphne obviously got her hands on these documents, and as you can guess, she went even harder on her government. Because now she had proof, and the proof was public. And this really pissed people off. She received accolades for breaking this case and for sharing the dirty dealings of her government with the world, but in addition to accolades, she received many more death threats and acts of violence. At one point, she had to build a giant fence around her house to keep people out, but obviously that didn't even 100% work. By this time, in 2016, her sons were all grown, but would still come by the house, often to see their parents and have a meal. And on the morning of October 16th, 2017, this was the case with her 31-year-old son, Matthew, who came by and had a salad that Daphne made for him. Daphne was going out to run an errand. I think she was like going to the bank. Oh, you know what happened? She was talking shit on Keith Chembri and the prime minister, and they fucking froze her bank accounts. They froze her bank accounts for reporting about them. So this is how much the government fucking hated her.
That's so insane.
Yeah, fucking nuts. So she was going to the bank and like to try, I don't know, get her own fucking money. So yeah. She left her son at the house and she went and got in her car. Now, for whatever reason, her car was parked outside of her home, not within the walls. Which is kind of crazy to me because one of the other things that had happened in her neighborhood was that her neighbor's car had been set on fire previously, most likely by somebody thinking that they were lighting her car on fire.
It was hers, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, she gets in the car and begins driving. And as she's going down the road, she passes by a nearby farm. The farmer's outside, and he later said he heard a weird noise and then a scream and then saw Daphne pull her emergency brake. And immediately after, her white Peugeot exploded, flying 80 meters into the air before landing in a field.
That is so dramatic. I'm like genuinely gasping. Yes. Like,
I know. That's, I can see your
holy
face.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah. 80 meters into the air and landing in a field.
That's horrific.
Fucking horrific. Matthew, Daphne's son, who was at the house, obviously heard this. And later said he knew immediately that it had been a car bomb. He ran down the road to the field and found the car on fire. He started looking for his mother, just hoping to find her. And very unfortunately, he did. But he did not. He just found pieces. He found torso, legs. I mean, she had been
not going to be in good shape after that.
No. She was only 53 years old when she was murdered.
Ugh.
Yeah. Very fucking traumatic and horrifying.
So yeah, immediately, poor kid too.
I know. And he's the one in her, like, following in her footsteps. So, like, I can't imagine, like, what that
scary.
Yeah, exactly. Immediately, her family began to criticize the government, who were, quote, actively investigating her death. But the family actually went as far as asking certain members of the police and, like, the justice, you know, cabinet or whatever to step down from the case because they didn't trust them because Daphne had targeted them over the years. So why would these people want to help? They might even be involved for all we know, right? Luckily, these people did agree to step down, which was good. And the prime minister at least was pretending to go along with things. I also wanted to note that Julian Assange offered 20,000 euros for information leading to an arrest in this case.
Oh, and man.
And nobody knows, Julian Assange is the founder of WikiLeaks. He is an amazing, like, truth fighting journalist. He has had his name slandered for years, and he's now rotting away in a British prison. He's going to be extradited, I think, here, and then we're probably just going to kill him or just stick him in a cell. It's a really fucked up situation.
Easily could have been on this list, though.
I thought about that, and I'm so fucking glad that he's not. But he's effectively on it as of right now. I mean, he's being held as a political prisoner, essentially, for bullshit charges against him. He's apparently very ill and not being cared for. It's a big fucking problem. But anyway, he was, you know, he cared about her. Daphne was actually referred to as a one-woman WikiLeaks. So she's like a very powerful source.
She's on par,
Yes. But the police did start to investigate. It took not too long. And finally, this same farmer, the one that saw what happened to Daphne, with whom she did not get along because they didn't agree politically, and you can imagine what that would be like with her, he actually came forward with some information that helped crack this case open. He said that he'd seen a white car in the area in the days preceding her death, and that the car had been parked near a wall that both blocked whoever was behind it, but also allowed that person to have a clear view of Daphne's entire home. So you could hide behind this wall and just fucking spy on her, and nobody could see you. Which is
so like creepy.
A really weird design. Police went to the wall and they found a cigarette butt that DNA linked to a man named Alfred DiGiorgio. It wasn't much. He could have just thrown a cigarette butt down there. You know, there's no, he could have been up there for any reason. Police then demanded all cell phone records for the days surrounding the murder to be collected from that area. There's two cell service providers in Malta because Malta is like, has like not even 500,000 people on the entire island. So it's not
small.
Yeah. So it's a big undertaking, but not nearly as large as some of the cell phone analysis that we've seen over the years, you know, in true crime. This is a lot smaller pool. So they're looking at the time of her death in the area of her death, checking cell phone towers. And what they find is three SIM cards had been used in that area on the day of her murder at that time. They found that two of those were in burner phones and one was in a burner like thing called a God device, which is basically available to people who want to control their garage door from across the world, essentially. Like,
hey, it's cool.
Yeah, you like program the SIM card and then you can like control your house when you're like across the ocean or something. It's for hobbyists. And like there's home automation that does that. Like that's what Rory used to do, like install the shit in houses. So like billionaires could turn their AC on when they're in Europe or something. Very weird. Anyway.
Okay.
So there's these three devices, two phones and this God device. They're all burner devices, so they can't trace them back to people, which is really frustrating. But what they did, they tracked the use of the phones. So they were like, okay, this SIM card was here and there, you know, at those times. And they were able to track one of the phones to like a dock where there was a boat and there were cameras there. And those cameras were, the footage was given to them by whoever owned the cameras and showed that on that day at that time, there was a man in a boat on a cell phone, and his name was George DiGiorgio. So we have the DNA on the cigarette of Alfred DiGiorgio and a video of George DiGiorgio, which also don't do that to your kids. If your last name's DiGiorgio, don't name your child George. Like, no Richard Richards. I don't like that shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, as you can guess, this is Alfred's brother. So now we have a connection. We can say that cigarette butt was probably placed there by Alfred while he was there during the time the bomb went off. His brother is texting with him. They're texting this God device. And what they were able to do is line all of this up. A text message was sent from the burner phone to the burner God device at the exact moment that the car was blown up. They also traced these to a third man, Vince Muscat. Muscat is a really, really popular last name in Malta, so he's not related to the Prime Minister. Yeah.
Okay.
M-U-S-C-A-T. But he was also involved and was traced by association with these two as well as the phone use. So these men were arrested for the murder, and it seemed like the murder was about to be solved. But the question remained, like, why did they murder her, right? It's fair they were criminals, but they weren't ever named by her in any of her reporting, so it doesn't really make sense, right? So they remained in prison awaiting trial, and for 2 years, that was sort of it. From 2017 to 2019, that was the story that the Maltese government was going with, is these guys didn't like that she was reporting on criminal activity and they wanted her
just
dead.
Just in general, nothing specific.
Yeah, enough for them to put a fucking car bomb in her car, right? I should say that it actually, there were 5 car bombings in Malta in the years preceding. And once these guys were arrested, they did stop. So there's no real question as to whether or not they did this. But it's just like, why?
Why? Right? Yeah, it sounds like they were put up to it by maybe higher powers.
Yes, it really does sound that way. So in 2019, a man named Melvin Thuma came forward with information about a murder plot. He came forward after being arrested in a money laundering investigation. And what he said was, I want immunity from the money laundering investigation, and I want immunity in the murder case of Daphne if I come forward with what I know. He said that in addition to wanting a literal get out of jail free card, he also came forward because he said 2 of the people who hired him were now trying to kill him as well. So he was like, I have to come forward so I don't get offed. So he said that he was the middleman in the murder for Daphne and that he had proof. And his proof was hundreds of hours of secretly recorded tapes of him and these men plotting her murder.
Oh my God.
Melvin agreed to share what he knew. And he said that the 2 men who hired him to kill Daphne were, 1, a man named Jorgen Fenwick, a businessman with tons of money coming out of Russia, who dealt in casinos and hotels in Malta, among other places. And the other man was none other than Prime Minister Joseph Muscat's chief of staff, Keith Shembri. Now, if you remember,
acting totally on his own, I'm sure. It has nothing to do with the Prime Minister whatsoever.
No, not at all. Not at all. But the craziest thing about this, not really, there's so many fucking crazy things, but one of the craziest things is that the very last blog post that Daphne wrote on the day that she died was about, quote, that crook Shembri, as she liked to call him. And the very last words that she wrote on her blog, the very last words she ever wrote in her life was, quote, there are crooks everywhere you look now. The situation is desperate. So,
God. Yeah. And this is the crook that was currently like on her mind.
Yes.
Yeah.
Apparently, this Melvin guy was sort of like an errand boy for Jorgen Fenwick after they met and became friends when they were younger. Melvin was scared about being murdered by Jorgen because he knew he was going to be caught. So basically, Jorgen was like, you're going to get caught in this money laundering scheme. And when you get caught in this money laundering scheme, I need you to have all of the murder stuff thrown away so that they can't connect me. But Jorgen was afraid that Melvin was going to slip up and get arrested and then turn on him. So he was going to kill Melvin. So it's like, if Melvin didn't think he was going to get killed, would he have turned? You know what I mean? It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, it's hard to say. But either way, Melvin did come forward. And then the prime minister did grant him a full pardon in return for information about Daphne's murder. Which is interesting, since you know that he had to know he was going to get implicated in it, right?
But I'm like, we're talking about your chief of staff. He was not acting independently.
But what's he going to do? His crooked little hands are tied, right? Like, he's got to grant. You know, what's he going to say? Like, no thanks.
Crooked little hands.
Crooked little fucking hands. You know?
Yeah.
So he had to do it to appease the people of Malta, because she was a fucking hero. When her funeral occurred, there was a 10-minute standing ovation that like rang out across the country. Her casket was brought in. I mean, she was a fucking hero.
Yeah.
So anyway, Melvin sang like a canary and Jorgen was arrested in November of 2019. As to why he wanted to kill Daphne, why Jorgen wanted to, it's because he was the owner of a business called 17 Black, which was in Dubai. Fuck Dubai, by the way. And Daphne wrote about it after finding it listed in the Panama Papers. She alleged that the company also had links to Keith Shembri and that they were both crooked. During their investigation, it was found that there were emails between Jorgen and these officials. And in these emails were talks of payments for unspecified services. So maybe a hit? They gave the bombers $150,000. Somehow, though, these tapes didn't seem to have any proof that Keith was involved, but he was still arrested in November 2019 after resigning from his position as chief of staff. Melvin himself recounted how he was put on the government's payroll after having a meeting with Keith, which was set up by Jorgen Fenwick. He said they never expressly spoke about Daphne, but he knew the job he was given, for which he never did any work, was his payment for arranging this hit. The gigantic piece of dog shit, Keith Chembry, was questioned in Daphne's death, but ultimately was released and not charged, of course.
Of course he wasn't. Of course he wasn't. Yeah. No.
Morgan.
We...
I know.
We have this, like, here, too. Like, a certain level of government official and politician, like, can just, literally go in the street and, like, shoot people in the head and then, like, burn down an orphanage. And then the news will be like, well, there's nothing we could do.
Yeah. You know? What are we supposed to do?
It gets worse, though.
Jorgen offered up everything he knew about Daphne's death, as well as all of the corruption in the Maltese Parliament that he knew about in exchange for immunity. And he was rejected. And I wonder why. Because he knows what's up with the Prime Minister. He knows what's up with all the... Like, why is the Prime Minister going to give him that? You know what I mean? Because they've got their patsy. They've got their patsy. They don't need anything else. That being said, Prime Minister Joseph Muscat did resign December 1st after massive protests around the country demanding his resignation. And in early 2020, he was removed from Parliament. So the entire government was toppled as a result of her death, but none of them were charged. And this is despite people taking the stand and saying Keith Chembry and others knew about and participated in the plot to kill her. Someone went on the stand and said this under oath, and they were like, meh.
God, like, it, I'm just gonna make sounds. Like,
I know. So this case is pretty fucking crazy. And anybody who says that people are conspiracy theorists for, like, claiming that the government, like, murders their detractors, all I can say is, like, what?
Oh, no, they do.
We just did two cases, you know? Like, if you think this doesn't extend to the American government, you're fucking kidding yourself, okay? Like,
yeah, period. No, don't, let me just say this. Don't like any governments. They're all bad. They're all bad.
They're all bad.
They all do bad shit. Like, there I can't ones think.
Are better than others, but no, they're all bad. And anybody who wants to be in power probably shouldn't be. And that's the catch 22 right there. There it is. Ugh,
God.
Yeah.
It's so fun. It's so obvious and blatant. And it's like there were consequences, but there weren't.
There weren't. So, hold on. Like we're not even done. So, All right. Okay. So, Daphne's son picked up her slack. He's continued to call the government and advocate for justice for his mother. Her website is still up. You can still read all of her spicy takes on the shitbags in power at the time of her death, which I fucking love. She's so fucking spicy and does not give. It's so good. Go read it, everybody. It's just hername.com. Daphne Caruana Galizia.com. As for the men who murdered her that were allowed to be held accountable, the brothers DiGiorgio each pleaded guilty eventually and were given 40 years. The third man who was more peripherally involved was given 15 years. Jorgen Fenwick is still fighting for his freedom, attempting to have judges removed and statements thrown out. And with offshore account and Dubai money, like he could succeed. But for now, he's in custody and has been like the fall guy.
But the guys whose like ideas this all was are fine.
The guys who gave the arranger of the hit a government job in return have not been charged. And this guy who was on you can prove that he was on the government payroll, came out and said Keith Chembry knew about this hit, talked about this hit, was involved. Among other people, I didn't even get into all the other names of the people involved. This case goes so fucking deep. Obviously, the Prime Minister himself was fucking involved. There's no way he didn't know, you know? So, I mean, that's it. She was murdered. Her family is still fighting for justice for her and for justice for the people of Malta. What the fuck? Like,
it's fucked up, dude.
It's insane. Like, I don't even know what to say.
I just hate that there's untouchable people like in power that it only gets worse. Like I hate it. I hate all politicians everywhere, Cindy.
Fuck them all. Honestly, it's so funny. I always say this, like, I'm not a religious person and it's so me that the reason that I want hell to exist, I want religion to be right so hell can exist so I know that those people are there.
You don't care about the reward. You just want the punishment.
My reward is their punishment. Like, you can't just do this and then die and you're absolved and like nothing happens. It's such a fucked up thing. Like,
well, I think that's what's comforting about the idea of hell is that those people are eventually going to get punished, whether even if they're not on earth, right?
I like to think so. That's the only thing that could ever convince me to be religious It's not like logic or like wanting to go to heaven. It's wanting to people to suffer later. I don't know. I'm a horrible person, apparently. I don't know.
No, it's okay. No, I mean, some people are like Christian and they're very forgiving and they're all about forgiving their enemies. I like that you take it the opposite way.
Yeah, I really do. I'm not Christian, but if I ever were going to be, that would be the approach to turn me.
I mean, I do think there it's totally acceptable to wish suffering upon your enemies. I think it's okay.
Right? I do too.
I think it's okay.
Yeah.
I think it's okay.
I think so too. Especially when they're people like this. Like, fuck these monsters.
Yeah. Yeah. When they're murdering with impunity, it's fucking angering.
So fucked up. It's so fucked up. So anyway, I hope that was a 7-pager. I apologize, everybody. That was really long.
No, that was great. That was really good.
I liked the Panama Papers. Like, I can't even.
I like our choices this week, though. Like, all of them were, like, legit stand-up people. Like,
yeah, that makes me feel good. And also very bad.
Also sad,
in a way. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I'm picking for next week, right?
I think so, yeah.
My turn.
I inserted the journalist.
Yes, because we had another one that was suggested by a listener who has given us some like banger lists. They're always giving us like really good shit. So thank you for this. We're going to do Chicago Murders.
It's a very, very good topic.
We're just going to take it in that direction. We're just going to do a city. I love when we do like site specific murders. I think it's interesting. So this will be a good one. This is going to come out, you guys, not this episode, but the first of the Chicago episodes is going to come out the day after my 40th birthday because I'm fucking old, an old lady. So just think about that.
40. Your favorite word.
I hate the word 40. I hate it.
Yeah, we discussed this. Yeah,
I know. I'm going to say it again. I fucking hate it. And I was telling somebody, I was like, I'll just tell everybody I'm 41 because I don't want to say I'm 39 twice because then I'll seem vain. And it's not about the age. It's just about the word. It's like, you know, I hate that. It's like moist. I don't like the word. Anyway, so that's what we're going to do. Enough about that. We're going to do Chicago Murders. Thanks, everybody, for listening, liking, supporting. We have 2 new patrons. You guys, I don't have stickers ordered. I have to order the stickers so I can give them to you all because we actually ran out, which is such
slight delay.
Yeah, but it's a great problem to have that we like sent all our stickers out. We really appreciate you guys. We love you. I guess that's it, right? Do we have anything else?
No.
All right, just down to business. All right, well, thanks again, everybody, for listening. And until the next one.
Stay.
Off our
list.
Stay off them.